Okay, so we are here having a conversation. So I am with Bella, and this is how your occupation therapist. And Bella is an AHP education sleep.
Yes.
Okay.
But with a nursing background.
With the nursing background, yeah.
It's a cross-section landing for Bella.
Okay, and it's actually very good because this is an opportunity for an education sleep to learn about occupation therapy.
Absolutely.
So equally, background of the story is like Bella is arranging to have some education where OT1 would be one of the speakers. And there is so much information out there and it's very difficult to find out which is which.
Yes.
So I thought I'd give this opportunity for Bella to ask questions about OT, but equally the things that I regularly share to students and to anybody who's rotating to us. So the first one, there are two things really. Occupational therapy.
Yes.
In a nutshell. Definition of it, what we do, our concerns. That's the one topic that I talk about. The other thing would be the continuum of healthcare. Okay. And perhaps the continuum of rehab. But we'll go with just the standard ones. OT.
Interesting. So for me, I would want to know how does OT sit with the wider MDT team?
Okay.
So what does OT bring to the table? Because, you know, patient is the center of everything and everybody caters to the patient.
Mm-hmm.
So then we see a lot of doctors and nurses involved in the care most of the time.
Mm.
And then other allied health professionals just get, like, you know, in and out, in and out. So I want to know how are you...
Where does OT come in?
What do you mean?
Yeah, where does OT come in?
Yes, exactly. So that is the question. Where does OT come in and how does it fit well with the rest of the team to make sure that the patient is progressing towards the discharge or progressing towards, you know, recovery?
Okay. That's a wonderful question.
Yeah. And I want to follow it up with one more thing so that I don't interrupt your flow.
Yeah.
So how does OT fit with the wider team, and what does other people need to know about OT as an allied health professional, as somebody who is an SLD or as a dietetics? What do they need to know about OT? So then, like, if somebody asks them anything, like, no, they know this is how they fit in and this is how we work together.
Okay.
So that is the
two big questions.
Yes, sorry. Thank you.
I would have forgotten the second one already. Okay. So where does OT fit in? OT fits in. First, let's identify what would be the domain of concern of the profession itself. Because a profession is a profession because they have a certain concern. This is called the domains of the concern of the profession, like medics, medical status. If you're a cardiologist, your heart is your focus. Physiotherapy, I guess, would be the physiology. Nursing would be the overall well-being and the care. With occupation, our concern is the person's occupation. And by definition, what is occupation to that person? Occupation is anything that a person does.
Okay.
That has meaning to them. Anything that is of value to them. Anything that they do every day. Anything that worries them. Anything is considered as an occupation.
Okay.
So for example, and occupation will, if you think of any activity, think of any activity now. And so any occupation, any task will fall on one of three major categories. Yeah. So for example, washing, dressing, toilet hygiene, you know, wiping your bottom, you know, these are all personal care. These are all occupation. Yeah. That's what a person does. Functional mobility, getting from A to B is also an occupation. It's your business. It's your job. We don't need you to walk in a very wonderful way as long as you get there.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of how you get there, as long as you're safe, that's your occupation.
Yeah.
So it will fall on the category of personal care. Washing, dressing, grooming, oral hygiene, showering, bathing, toilet hygiene, community mobility, feeding and eating, and swallowing. In the States, OT will look after swallowing, but not in this country.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah. So we do this phage management because eating is something that is your day-to-day things. You know, how
ADLs,
do you do it? Exactly. That's ADLs. Nowadays, sleep is also an occupation. It's a foundational ADL, where everything would be foundational. Now, that's just recently in the year 2000 or so when sleep became an occupational concern. Yeah. So these are some of the things, including health maintenance activities. If you want to lose, if you want to lose weight, that's your occupational concern. You know, if a medication routine, how do you take your tablets? That's your occupation. If you want to maintain your health and well-being, that's your occupation.
Yeah.
So that's occupation. So that's one area. Okay. Another occupation will fall on the category of work. And work would be employment, how you look for a job, how you perform in the job is your occupation as a student. Yeah. So educational pursuit, that's your occupation. How do you look for education? How do you learn? How do you participate? So that's one. You can have financial management. How do you manage finances? How do you look after the house? How do you look after the garden? All the domestic tasks, cleaning, laundry, washing the dishes, it will fall on that category of work, whether it's paid or unpaid. That's your job. That's your business. So that's our remit. It's big, isn't it? And then the last area is called leisure and leisure participation because it maintains your well-being.
Yeah.
So what would be your leisure activities?
Mine would be going for walks.
See, that's your occupation.
Yeah.
Imagine if you're in a situation where you can't do that. When we need you to be able to do that, we'll find a way on how to do that, right? So occupational therapy is all about doing all of these things regardless of the impairment or the disability.
Okay.
Yeah? We have to get you to do those things. Okay, that's one concern of occupation. In critical care, that will not be addressed.
Be there as well,
Okay? Now, so that's one belief of OT, occupation and occupational task. We also believe, one of the concerns of OT is that we believe that in every individual lies a core self. And we would call this most recently, because we wanted to be more known to a lot of people, we're calling it spirituality, the drive. But back in the days, we would call it the volition. Everybody's will to do something. That's our concern. You know, what drives you to want to get up?
Yeah.
What drives you to want to spend time doing your leisure activities? What motivates you? So it is their values, their interest, their personal causation. That is our concern. So now is where, when you go to critical care, this is now something that we would be addressing, right? Am I making sense?
Yeah.
So we are on the side of psychology in here because we have that. So. Oh, so that's the core self, right? The other concern of OT would be this thing called performance component.
Okay.
Performance components are little things that a person does that will enable them to do the things that they like to do.
Okay.
And these would be the physical component of the person. This would be the thinking component of the person. And this would be the emotional component of the person. There are three things in here, right? Physical, easy. Strength, range of motion, tone, yeah? Endurance. These are the physical components that are easily measured, yeah? So we're concerned about that too, because we need to know how to restore it, to address that, to enable a person to do something, right? And we're also concerned about the cognition. Your attention, your concentration, your judgment, your sorting, your matching. You know, your skills that will enable you to make good decisions, your capacity to make a decision. That is our concern too, right? And then the last concern, it's triangular, the last one. That's why I'm doing that, because it's a triangle, is the emotional or affect.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So that would be your, again, motivation, coping, defense mechanisms, you know, your resilience as well. Yeah. So those are the concerns of occupational therapy. It's big, isn't it? That's why occupational therapy, we can practice occupation throughout the lifespan happens from when they are a child to school age, to adult, adolescence, geriatrics and everything. So if I'm an OT working in pediatrics and your problem is handwriting, there are techniques on how I can help you improve that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. If your problem is, say, dyslexia, where you have difficulty with shapes, because an A or a P and a D and a Q, they're all the same shape.
Right.
But it's just a different position compared to your body. So there are some techniques on that, okay? So where OT comes in the bigger perspective, that would be, before we go that, how are we? Are we okay?
Yes.
On the OT. It's big, isn't it?
It is big. It is so, there's so much umbrella. I think people might not be aware.
No.
That they have got so much component in it, like doing that spirituality.
Yeah.
Emotion aspects.
Exactly. Yeah.
Even, I think they just more focus on the fine skills and motor skills and things like that. All courageous.
Therapy would be the hands.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that is the most understanding. I wouldn't have known.
Yeah.
It's a one-two-dimensional.
It is. And what's strange is this, and I'm writing some concept and theory about this. We're abstract, OT, because occupation is abstract. And we only take form and shape depending on the person in front of us. So if a person, say in critical care, you're there, they're physically weak, then okay, I might be able to contribute to the physical restorative side of things, yeah. Okay. Or if you're emotionally, you know, getting detached or you don't have that motivation, then I can do something, right, to do that. In terms of treatment, right? We have five types of treatment in OT.
Okay.
The first one is restorative treatment.
Okay.
And this is fixing something that we can fix, particularly the physical side.
Okay.
That's easy. And this is where the restorative treatment is shared with physiotherapy.
Okay.
That's why people say, oh, there's a cross boundary. We always do the same things anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're referring to the physical component.
Mm-hmm.
And if I say that with a speech, psychologist, we have that restorative side.
Yeah.
Along with the cognition, you know, we'll restore orientation, attention, we'll find activities that will enable you to improve your perception.
Yeah.
So that's restorative side. The other intervention is called alter intervention. In here, we cannot change the person anymore, but what we will do is we will change the entire environment so that the person will be able to do and will still function properly and appropriately in the environment. This is now more focused on the community. For example, elderly person can't do the stairs.
Yeah, you assistive stay, devices and you, things
you,
like that.
You
yeah.
stay downstairs, have yeah. a bed downstairs, yeah. have everything in
rails
there.
And things like yeah. that to hold on. Yeah.
Yeah. So that would be an alter intervention.
Okay.
The other type of intervention, this is where you mentioned it's modify intervention.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. This is where we would use adaptive aids.
Okay.
Yeah. If you are walking and you're unsafe, let's get you an adaptive aid or a walking frame. Yeah. In Canada, the walking frames are the domains. OTs are the ones that are giving this.
Wow. What? Here, it's PTs doing the Zimmer walks and everything. Yeah.
I mean, because it's an adaptive aid, isn't it? You know, where one profession focus is on the walking and then refining the walking, improving the balance, that is physiological retraining, you know. And if you can, we need to prevent. So that's modifying intervention. Okay. Yeah. If you can't dress with one hand after a stroke, we teach you one hand dressing technique.
Oh.
Yeah. Exactly. Modify intervention. If you can't get out of the other side of the bed, maybe it's better to go on the other side of the bed. You know?
Okay.
Yeah. Modify intervention. The other intervention is called preventative intervention.
Preventive.
Yeah. Prevent. Meaning it's the same as restorative.
Yeah.
And it's also it's the same as modify, but your purpose is to prevent problems from taking place. So for example, if we're in critical care and the joint range in the hand is at risk of using the range of motion because of the immobility, and we do passive stretches, I'm doing that to prevent the joints from seizing.
Yeah.
Range of motion, if you remember, this is a performance component.
Yeah.
The physical. But I'm doing it to prevent problem because this preventative action will have a factor in you when you engage on the bigger things.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So if I do passive stretches, if I do some tapping, vibratory input, maintain that muscle ball through whatever stimulation that I need to do, that's preventative. because I can't do direct ADL retraining yet in critical care. Yeah. And then the last type of intervention is support intervention.
Okay.
Meaning, if you're applying psychological techniques, that's supportive intervention.
Okay.
If I facilitate, this is create and support, meaning I'm creating a circumstance where a patient can thrive and can improve and can be better. So the act of us referring a patient to community services, that action of referral is a supportive intervention because I am making things happen for the person.
Yeah, yeah.
I am creating opportunities and circumstances. So all of these treatments for OT will fall under the acronym RAMPS.
RAMPS.
Restore, alter, modify, prevent, and support.
Yes.
Yeah. So these are the treatment interventions. And then obviously there will be more details on under the restorative side. There'll be so many techniques. Biomechanical, neurodevelopmental, sensory integration, cognitive retraining. There's so many techniques on that side. Okay. But basically that's what that is. So that is OT in a nutshell. Going back to the challenge,
yeah. It
is very difficult because when the problem happens once the person exudes that fault, once the person shows that problem, then that's where we can come in. I won't be coming in to insist on an intervention that I know you don't need.
Okay.
And so the problems, the person's problem can show up. It can be a physical problem, then we'll do something. It can be an emotional problem, then we'll do something. It can be a cognitive problem, then we'll do something, right? So I did mention about the core self,
yes,
performance component, the three physical, emotional, and psychological, and the performance areas of ADL, work, and leisure.
Yes.
The other...
That's it.
Yeah. The other one is performance context. Situations where that influences the performance.
Okay.
We're concerned about that. Particularly environmental context. The home environment, that's our concern. If the home environment will not enable you to do the things that you need to do, we'll have to do something about the home environment. Yeah. If the social environment will have an impact, maybe we can do something about that, either through education, if it's family dynamic.
Yeah.
So it's not just the person that we are dealing with.
Yeah, it's the whole.
Exactly. Yeah. Like it's a life force. Occupation is a life force. Isn't it? Did it make sense?
It did make sense. Now it made sense what does an OT does. Like, uh-huh. So then more than, it'll debunk a lot of myths that people have around OT, then though this is what they do. So I think it is very good for them to understand that these are the niches that they
go through.
So that is very good. And how would you, how would you put in, how do you work with the other allied health? How do you support a physio? Or how does a physiotherapy support an OT? How does a dietetic support an OT? How does OT support a dietetics? How is there a reciprocity between the allied health therapy?
Okay, good. Now we're on to the next part of this stuff. Yeah. So we've defined occupational therapy. I would start with the continuum of healthcare because what we do will depend on where we work.
Okay.
Yeah. And you probably have heard about this, primary care.
Yes.
Yeah. In a nutshell, primary care is all about wellness promotion and illness prevention. This is what the government says is cigarette smoking is dangerous for your health.
Yes.
Stop them from having cancer. Don't drink and drive. You know, if you see stroke, act fast. Keep diabetes at bay. Keep active. All of these initiatives, right? If I'm an OT working in that side, it's all about wellness promotion and illness prevention. So I can work in a weight reduction program in the community. So that's that. We're not there. Okay. GPs are also in the primary care. Keep people in the community as healthy as possible. Once a person becomes unwell, they need to have access to diagnostic equipment.
Yes.
Regular intensive medical attention, regular testing, intense medication. Yeah. Then they need to go to the next stage, which is secondary care. Now, secondary care would take the form of a big general hospital where there's a lot of specialties. If I'm working in that facility, my job will be to identify what areas has been affected by the condition, and my responsibility is get you to that level safe enough to enable you to move out of that facility. And there are only three things that we would require to get a person out. Safety with functional mobility.
Mm. Yes.
You should be independent and safe with your toilet hygiene. Mm. Or you should be able to call for help that you're not confused. This is called emergency response.
Okay.
Yeah. If you're able to do these three things, then we can get you home. So if I'm in a district general hospital, I'll find out, make a quick assessment of your ADL abilities.
Yes.
Yeah. And your ADL abilities, we will enable you to do the things that you need to do to move out. Because you need to move.
Yes.
So that people in need of the beds and the diagnostic materials needs to have access to it. So that's why people working in district general hospital, they get disappointed that they're only discharge planning. You're not discharge planning. You're facilitating that flow, right? If the person cannot do this, another responsibility of the therapist would be to make recommendations as to where they would go next. And that would be the tertiary care.
Okay.
Third level, and you have two forms. If you're not safe with these three things, you can't go home. You need to go to a tertiary care inpatient facility. This will take the form of rehab unit or optimization bed or convalescence facility, intermediate care facilities. It's basically inpatient because you're not able to do these three things. And they have names. They have different names to it. But it's a third level.
Yeah.
You're already medically optimized. We will do that. And once you're there, we'll do the therapy. We'll do the rehab to get you to do these three things. So that's one. If you're able to do these three things, but not get washing and dressing and cooking and going outside and shopping, we'll refer you to a tertiary care community-based. Yeah. And there will be some services out in the community that will do this.
Okay.
Like reablement care team.
Okay.
So like you'll optimize the washing and dressing. So that's the one. Okay. So we will, is it me?
Yeah.
Okay. And then last but not the least, so that would be the things, you know, until back in the days, there are therapists that are seeing patients in the community all the time. But because the workforce is sparse, and we cannot meet the demand, the government have put in reablement care.
Okay, instead of, okay.
They are carers with enabling activities,
okay,
and they're overseen by therapists.
Okay.
So they have the duty of the,
going in,
as a carer, house, but also, also facilitating. They're different from social services carers because social services carers are already doing it for them. Yeah. So it's like therapy at home. So third level, tertiary care, primary preventative, secondary, maintain the the medical stability. Third level would be
optimized.
Yeah. Now, every now and again, there are problems that when it happens, it's catastrophic. Spinal cord injury, head injury, burns. Back in the days, they would be on secondary care, on district general hospital. But because there's no
space
and there is not enough cases and there's not enough skills to man everything, what the government did is they've done different places around the country to provide these services.
Okay.
Sheffield, Stoke Mandeville for spinal cord injury, Coleman Unit, Lewin Ward for head injury, Chelmsford for burns. And the role, this is now called quaternary care.
Okay. Oh, yeah, the one that you mentioned. Yeah.
Yes. Quaternary is a specialist service focused on that particular thing. Okay. If I'm an OT working on that side, my role and responsibility be the same. To do the assessment on the areas that I am concerned about, the ABLs, the cognition and everything else, and do the therapy until you're safe to go home. And most people tend to stay there for about 6 months at a time, even up to 1 year. Yeah. Now, in the hospital where we're in now, this is a quaternary care service.
Yes.
Specific to the organs of heart and lungs. And it is a surgical hospital, apart from the respiratory side.
And the medical
side,
yeah.
Yeah. So that meant that we will do what we need to do. It's a hospital. So we are behaving like a secondary hospital.
Yeah.
So the only objective for us to do here would be to assess the functional abilities. Mm-hmm. What would stop you from going home? And the three things are functional mobility, toilet hygiene, emergency response. If you're safe enough, we get you home. Yard. And if you can't, I will make
the enablement
care. I would, and they need our report.
Okay, to see how well the patient is or how much.
And what do we need? The functional goals are required.
Okay.
You know, so that's going to happen. Even if they go to a rehab facility, they need the functional status report. So that's what we would be doing, right? So that's the quaternary care.
Okay.
Right? And that's straightforward because, so our duties, again, the core responsibilities, it's the same, right? ABLs, performance components, performance areas, and performance context. If a person is stopping, can't go home because of the environment, we'll do what we can to mitigate that problem.
Yeah.
If the person can't go home because nobody's going to do the shopping, we have to make sure that somebody will do that. Yeah. If they're not safe with showering, we'll have to make sure that somebody's doing that. And to enable them to do that, while they're here, we'll have to do functional retraining.
Yeah, I need to get them stronger.
Yeah. Now, that is with the aspect of us providing the therapy where a patient is medically stable.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
There is no need for intensive care intervention. Yeah?
That's right.
Now, going where a person is a few steps down and they're needing intensive care, where there's a lot of things being put into them, invasive medication, right? Invasive interventions. Now, there are now stages of rehab. Now, this is almost like the chapter 3. Stages of rehab, the highest level of rehab would be, this is the fourth level. There are four. We'll start with the top. Community reintegration.
Okay.
This would be, if you can't manage shopping, we'll do something. You know, we'll put a ramp, we'll do something. Get you integrated in the community. We're not there. Down in the ward is a step down. It's called purposeful activities.
Okay.
This is where we will do direct ADL retraining, washing, dressing, walking, toilet hygiene, so that we can get you home.
Okay.
That we can directly do because nothing is interfering on
providing those ADLs.
Exactly.
In the hospital.
There's no connections. There's not a lot of attachments.
Which if they're stable patients.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Now, if they're not, and if they're, say, freshly operated, just out of the operation, they're on the very, very basic level. Okay, this would now be called adjunctive therapies.
Okay.
This is where we would put in the preventative interventions. Yeah. We would stimulate the person in preparation to, because if a person lies down for a long period of time, they will get deconditioned.
So then you're preventing those things. Like,
exactly.
Okay.
And if they are freshly out of sedation, we need to get them, that's a level where there are cognitive retraining that you can do to do that. So that's called adjunctive therapies. So splinting, positioning, muscle, preservation, muscular preservation, stimulation. These are early interventions that you can do to get the person more purposeful so that they will be a little bit more engaging. Yeah. Because if they're that freshly from sedation, it's like they don't even know how to respond. They need to understand the environment. When it comes to critical care, people are saying early mobility is the key. Yeah, but what will be a precursor to early mobility is early engagement. You need to be awake. You need to understand, there's the therapist. Now I know what I need to do. That is where we can come in on that area. Then the next thing, if they're up, they're there. They're sitting down. They just are limited by a lot of connections and they're getting weak. The next stage of therapy after adjunctive is called enabling activities.
Okay.
These are little things that we can do and it can take the form of crafts, activities, end games, and something with purpose and music that will enable. I mean, the music can be on the adjunctive because if you just stimulate them.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's
the things that they like.
That would just stimulate. So auditory stimulation. Yeah. Or if they're hyper agitated, you provide calming music with low rhythm and low beats, and low pitch. That is calm. So if you want to facilitate, you need to provide stimulation by a high-pitched audio, high-pitch, high-frequency, high-rate, so fast, and then high-pitch as well. That's stimulating. So it depends on the approach.
Yes.
And these are all similar approaches that you would do in children sensory integration, all the techniques that you do, right? So that would be the, so that's adjunctive and enabling. Mm-hmm. So if I do little cut, paste, playing games, the person is suitable to do that. Because what else can you do in critical care, for example? Can you do washing and dressing?
No.
No. The only ADLs that they can do would be hair brushing.
Yeah. Or shaving.
Oral hygiene. Eating, if they're allowed. Grooming a little bit. A little bit of functional mobility. But that's being done by physiotherapists already. Yeah. So once we're in critical care, we'll find out, are they on the adjunctive phase? And therefore, we will do something. Okay. Are they on the enabling phase?
Yeah,
and therefore, we can stimulate that. Okay. The tools of our trade. Okay. Because in every profession, there has to be a tool. Activities.
Yeah.
Occupation.
Yeah,
doing. Yeah. So meaning anything in the environment we can use to get a person engagement.
Engaged, yeah.
If I've got marbles, then I'll use marbles. You know, if I have a Nerf gun, I will do that. You know, those pipes that can do, you can stimulate. Like, you have to be creative enough to do it.
Yeah.
Pillows and the thing, you know, I can put it in. You know, towels, I can fold that. I can get a person stroking it. Tissue paper, what can I do with that? You know, I can fold it in one way and then I'll ask the person to copy it. That's cognitive retraining.
Okay.
Isn't it? My hands, for example. Can you do a thumb? Can you copy this? And if a person does that, this is visual perceptual retraining.
Okay.
Also a cognitive retraining. Do a rock and roll sign. I'll do this. Do an I love you sign. That's doing that. You know, it's a peace sign. Up yours.
Yeah.
You know? So anything is doing that. So this is the use of environment, use of activity, use of self is another way. Because how I approach the person depends on what they need. You know, for example, one thing that I have been noticing on how people are managing delirium, for example, people are agitated. I have noticed that in a lot of professionals. They would talk. And they would educate. And there's three of them. And they was like, no, you're not doing that. And all of these, it doesn't mean anything. These are just sounds to a person. One would come in with gibberish. And then another one would come in. Gibberish. Another one would come in. It's so much noises that's happening. And yet people feel that they're approaching it in the best way that they can because they're educating and they're talking and they're most eloquent. And the initiation is so much better, you know. But really, you don't need to do that in somebody who's hyperactive. You want to provide little stimulation.
Yeah, and to calm them down.
Also, so that they will understand. It's like, stop, relax, lie down. If they can't do that, you need to just, sometimes you can even, if they're on a half awake, half asleep stage, you can even suggest, not saying to one person, it's like, I am tired. And then they will say that to themselves, I'm tired. I'm going to put my legs back onto the bed. I'm putting my legs. I'm going to make myself comfortable. So you mirroring those words, whispering in a way when somebody is almost, this is delirium, is a half awake, half asleep stage, you know. I am tired and I'm making myself comfortable. I am safe. I am in a safe place. Rather than you are in a safe place, because a person would mirror that. You are in a safe place. They can't say me. So it has to be I.
Yes, then they do it.
So when you say that, then there is a higher chance that the person will just do, and I am sleepy and I will relax. And I've done that so many times.
Something that I think I'll tell the nurses to try.
I've done that so many times. And the person is like, I said, how did you do that?
Oh my God, I think that is definitely a trick that I'm going to use next time.
Try.
When I'm at the patient headspace.
But what's happening now? What are the trends? Because of the delirium, make it brighter, you know, the daylight.
It's an overstimulation, I think.
Exactly.
I think when it comes to delirium, they want to make sure that the patient knows that what time of the day. I think orientation is, again, a big part of it. So sometimes for the orientation part of it, they want them to know it is not a dark space. It's, it's daytime.
Yeah.
And that is why they open the blinds just to get them, like, you know.
Yeah.
But I do understand the sense of delirium. You need little to no stimulation so that they calm.
And you need some time to actually get that. Because alertness, awareness, the readiness, the cognitive readiness, it's a tone.
Yeah.
It's a tonal readiness. If you're half awake, half asleep in the morning, you just don't know what's happening.
Yeah.
You need to have to bridge that. So the way I am always saying to people, delirium is a stage from when a person is well going to be in an unwell stage. That's a stage where they go through. Or from when they're unwell going to be well, that's a stage that they go through. It's just like twilight state where you're half awake, half asleep. You notice this happening when they're becoming unwell. That's the gray area, the twilight zone. Or when they're sedated and then going to that stage where they have full awareness, then yes, that's the stage. So you need to get that. It just depends on time, on how long the person will recover from it. But there's also, you can't push it all the way and expect that a person's attention and endurance will last the entire day. So you have to have this series of approach where you know, you wake up now, we'll give you 5 minutes. Okay, and then you rest. Okay, then I'll wake you up again and then we'll do this. We'll build up that time. Now we're talking about delirium management.
But, I think we did get off tangent a little bit. Because I was thinking, like, you know.
So what would others do?
Yes, like how, like, you know, what? How are you supporting other agents? So that,
I'm not, technically, I'm supplementing the need of people.
Okay.
So it's rather than supporting AHPs, how am I supporting the patient? So when we're saying, how am I supporting the patient? Like I said, stage are they in critical care? We're talking about critical care. Are you in need of cognitive retraining?
Okay.
Are you in need of psychological support? How do you do that? It's through activities. We can do that. We can build up routines in the ward for you so that you can do something. Because when you're not doing anything, there is this thing called occupational deprivation.
Okay.
Imagine somebody who's just on filter and they're just sitting down or almost semi-reclined. The tendency for the person is to just lie down and sleep.
Yeah.
But we never stop. As a human being, from the time that you're awake, what am I going to do next? What am I going to do next? What am I going to do next? Like now, you've been doing something. You let it be interrupted by this conversation. This is what we're doing next. And then after this, what am I going to do next? And that's the same for most of our patients. Obviously, there are periods where they need to rest.
Yeah.
And that was fine. So how am I supporting a patient? Depending on what they need.
Yes.
Yeah. Am I going to replicate mobility retraining? No.
No.
So I'm not going to take that off physiotherapists. Yeah. Can I help out on maintaining the muscles and the upper limb? I can help out on that one. Why? Because it needs an entire time. You don't just do it for 15 minutes and then I'll see you again tomorrow. It needs to be done the entire time, when you're doing all of this retraining. Cognitive stimulation. You can't just have one session today or, 30 minutes and that's it, I'm out. Most of the time, they'll be with nurses and nurses are busy. Is there something that we can do?
Yeah.
Once we have a full capacity, that would be the objective, that people will be busy engaging. If the objective for our patients is that to be off sedation, Then that's it.
Yeah.
Then you need, your therapy is to stay awake for as long as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So how am I supporting other team members? Gosh, it's the other team members. I factor them in.
Yeah.
In terms of what's your swallowing at the moment? So swallowing is impaired and you're not supposed to. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then we're not doing any feeding at the moment. But there are stages to feeding. There's pre-oral stage, oral stage, pharyngeal stage, you know, esophageal, you know, those are stages. From that, the oral stage is like awake, alert, attend, target, arm-hand coordination. I can start doing that. So that's how I'm supporting in preparation for whatever needs to happen.
Okay.
Isn't it? Because eventually you'll be sitting down, you'll be eating. Yeah. We have patients who are on heart support, for example. They're okay. They're physically good. They're standing, they're walking with physios, they're talking. Then what else is happening throughout the day? Yeah. So apart from the volition and spirituality, there's the habits and routines is something that is missing in their day. So sometimes I coax a person, just like now I'm teaching them how we're teaching how to play the ukulele.
Oh wow.
She's on, you know, heart support. But she's okay. But it's not the ukulele.
Yeah.
But it is. Can I do something? Oh, yeah. I'm coming in. I was like, oh, okay, this is difficult for me. But it's that difficulty, that social interaction is the therapy. The doing is the therapy.
Yes. Yeah.
So for OT, I always say this, and this is always a motto that I do. You know, everything you do matters and has an outcome. You know, when somebody is, say, half awake, half asleep, sedated, nothing making sense, you touch this. You touch a forearm, it'll be interpreted by the brain. Whether you like it or not, it will reach to the brain. Yeah. You make a sound, it will reach to the brain. Yeah. So even with that, the muscles, there are sensors there. The Golgi tendon organ, muscle spindles, Pacinian corpuscles, there are all these sensors in there, right? If they're not stimulated, the muscles go floppy. And how do you best stimulate that? Yeah. You squeeze, you tap, vibratory input, electrotherapy is the best. Yeah, because you're stimulating those muscles. And that's why most people in critical care, once they're up and awake, you see, there is no movement at all. Because we have not done the preventative work that needed to happen. And this is, whose responsibility is this now? This would have been a shared responsibility because this is a physical component. Then on the physical side, yes, we're responsible, but equally we have team members who should be doing that. But why are we not doing that? Isn't it? Why is it that therapy just needs to be sitting and standing straight away when you have not done the preparatory work? You've not done the adjunctive work on the body to ensure that that muscle is optimized. Before you do the walking, before you do any running, what do?
How's the strength like?
Warm up. First thing you do in the morning, you do some stretches. Yeah. And why is that important? Every muscle, when it contracts, before a muscle contracts, it needs the stimulation from the nerve. The nerve will release acetylcholine. This acetylcholine will release, will open up the calcium channels in the muscles. And it will open up these actin myosin. And when that happens, every time that happens, an ATP would be broken down, you know, like energy, you know, will be broken down, right? And then every cross bridges that is built where the muscle shortens, energy will be broken down, right? All of a sudden, we'll sit a person up without stimulating the nerves.
Yeah.
Do you think those calcium channels would open up without the acetylcholine? No. And if it doesn't open up, these cross bridges would not reach.
Yeah.
It will not do anything. You know, it will not do that.
Very interesting.
I haven't
heard ATP in such a long time.
Isn't it?
Oh my God, I haven't heard ATP.
And who produces ATP? Which produces ATP? The ribosomes, right? Yeah.
Oh,
the powerhouse.
Mitochondria.
Mitochondria. Yeah. They're the ones that produce the powerhouse. Now, these ones are always, the body is always balancing itself. If the body feels that it doesn't need it, it will not produce anymore. You would have mitochondrial decay. Then there would be lesser energy. But you need to have prevented that. So, can OT come in? If we were there consistently all the time, I wouldn't stop. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't stop stimulating this person. You know, we'd be there all the time. But we're limited, obviously, by the numbers, the factors and everything. But I don't want that to be a reason, you know. It's still a very difficult answer. How am I supporting people? Is the next question. Is there an answer?
I think everything that you guys are doing, as I said, you are either aiding and abetting
aiding or preventing or facilitating or stimulating.
Yeah.
We are in a sense, you know, we are a like rehabilitation because we're not reliant on medication.
Mm.
But regardless of what is done, you know, like for example, if somebody's on ventilator, somebody's on BiVAD, somebody is on ECMO, we're still concerned about the performance components, the body. How do we prevent this? I can't do ADL retraining yet, but if I don't do anything now, it will prevent you from doing the things that you need to do, which meant you'll take longer to do the ADL retraining. Yeah. So the effects will still be measured at the end. And it's a challenge. It is a challenge for us because the definition, the concrete nature of occupation, that's why I'm saying to you, I'm writing a concept down because we are abstract. Doing is abstract. Your volition, your life force, it's like life force. It's so abstract, isn't it? And we only take form once the person comes in.
Yeah. Very tailor-made.
It's very
individualized. Yeah.
Back in the days, the definition of OT would be 4 to 6 minutes. Well, not too bad.
No, well.
Back in the days, the
definition of OT.
Definition is the art and science of directing man's participation in selected tasks to restore, reinforce, enhance participation, facilitate learning of the skills, to prevent, to facilitate skills and growth, and to deter and to prevent problems or something like that. So anything that you do that will prevent the conditioning is occupational therapy. But then that's very 70s.
Yeah.
That is, but that's what the doctors would understand. Yeah. Nowadays, the OT definition is, it's a profession that enables a person to do the things that they do regardless of their impairment or disability. So that's already on the higher level of therapy. But when you direct man's participation to engage, to do, that's occupational therapy.
Yeah.
And yet nowadays, because there's a lot of movement about functional, you can see the physios.
It's good. Yeah.
You can see the physios doing football. You can see the physios doing basketball. Mm. You can see physios doing a lot of things in critical care. When that used to be
a lot of occupation.
As occupational therapy.
And enabling.
Exactly.
Do it.
You know, while others, but nobody's doing the body work at the moment. Everybody's doing the functional bits. Now I might have to consider doing just
the stimulation of the body. Yeah.
Exactly.
That ATP gets released.
Exactly. Calcium channel, things like that. So this is what I thought about teaching.
The OT. Yeah. I think it would, my idea was this, Elise. I think there are a lot of people in the department who would not understand OT in this better way. And I think it needs to be very good because we talk about NDT approach so much. So I think we need to know, as you said, people might have very limited awareness about what an OT does.
Mm.
So this having these conversations will enable and gives awareness to everybody in a bigger, okay, this is what the OT is. It's just not a very small, because we just look after this. No, it is a bigger umbrella.
Yeah.
And we do all these things. So if people want to plan anything, activities and things like that, they can always make, you know, collaborative OT. Yeah. And that was my plan.
So the talk is about one, occupational therapy.
Yes.
The domains, the concerns.
Yeah.
The second stage would be the continuum of healthcare, which is the primary care, secondary care, tertiary care, quaternary care. And then the last would be the phase of rehab, which is adjunctive, enabling, purposeful, and community
integration.
And it's based on this. This is, and the tools of the trade, which is activity, use of self, use of environment. That's why when you say like music therapy, it's like, yes, it's just one of those tools that I can do.
Yeah.
Because if that's the occupation of the person, then we'll use that to get you to do things, isn't it?
And to get back to the routine of things.
Yeah. If you're an artist and you do easels and paints, then we'll do what we can to get you to do that. We'll use your interest to get you to do something, which makes it so abstract.
Well,
are you pleased that we have recorded this?
I think it is good because it will just give us pointers
like when you have, when we do the session as well in yeah, so you know, you can always go back to it and then like, this is good.
You like it?
Yeah,
Thank you.
I like it. And I think it'll be very important for everyone to know and everyone to be aware. I think that is the one everyone needs. And I think I want everyone to do from each department, like, you know, have that in-depth conversation about what we do and why are we here. It's like asserting yourself.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
Then I just want that. I think that is in my head. I really hope that is what people feel when they listen and have go to that session. That's what I'm thinking.
All right, Bella. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Hal.
Thank you, Hal.
Okay.
You've been a very good podcast.
Yeah, and we will do this. Yeah. You know, we can do this. Absolutely. We can share this to people.
Absolutely.
And I think you, me, and another profession sit down here.
And discuss among ourselves, like, you know, how do we do things? Yeah. Like, you know, one patient and so many of us. And everyone is catering to get the patient better. And everyone has a common goal.
Yeah.
I think it's very important for us to realize there's only one common goal.
Yeah.
And all of us are just doing our part in order to facilitate that common goal.
Yeah.
So that's good. Yeah. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.